Welcome to That Season Air podcast. I'm your host, Gina. Stick with me as I chat to season airs, expats and adventurers across the world, sharing their inspiring stories and interesting insights into living and working abroad. Today on the show, we talked to the beautiful and talented Lara Parsons. Lara came in to chat to us about her seasons working in New Zealand and Canada before she headed back to Europe to walk the Camino de Santiago trail, where she fell in love with the Spanish way of life. During this episode, Lara shares her knowledge on teaching English as a foreign language and how she went from amateur snowboarder to qualified instructor, completing her CASI training across Andorra and Austria. In 2019, whilst away from her friends and family in the UK, Lara was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer needing urgent treatment. In this episode, Lara tells us how the Austrian healthcare system took her under their wing and how this, coupled with season life, became a lifeline helping her to push through this terrifying experience. Stick with us right to the end of the show to hear Lara's encounter with COVID-19, her travel tips and advice, as well as how she stumbled upon an unexpected talent for golfing. Here's the show. Lara, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Gina.
Good, good. How's that Prosecco going down? Is it all right?
Oh, super well. Super, super
on this
well.
Fine.
First
Saturday
drink in two
evening.
Weeks. I'm going to be on the floor in about 20 minutes.
So you're here to talk to us about your summers and winters living and working abroad.
I am indeed.
Whereabouts in England are you from again?
I'm from a little city called Worcester, where Liam Perrin's Worcestershire sauce is made.
How did you get into working and living abroad?
I guess the thing that started it all off, at least the travelling side, is when I went to India when I was about 16. I trekked in the Himalayas for about a month. And ever since an incredible experience like that, I just had the need to experience different cultures, different countries. And of course, the older I got, the more I realised I didn't have to stay at home to earn money and see new things. I suppose until about 24, 25, I was more just visiting places for a month or so and then working at home. But when I was 25, I think, I did a two-year journey. I did 7 months travelling around Asia. Obviously, this was more just travelling and enjoying. And then I lived in New Zealand where I worked for 1 year and then in Canada for about 10 months and worked and lived there as well.
And what made you choose New Zealand?
I had snowboarded a couple of times before, not really had any experience, but I had heard from many friends it was super beautiful and a great place to work for a resort. I had a few connections there, so decided it would be a great place to do a first winter season. So I was working for Cadrona Resort in Wanaka, and I worked in the kind of the bigger restaurant there as a barista and a waitress.
How did you get that job? Was it just through connections?
Just applying on their website, applying to all the different kind of companies in Wanaka online. And yeah, they got back to me straight away and had a place for me.
What's the snow like over there?
Yeah, the snow's like pretty good. The mountains are so beautiful. Unfortunately, I can't say I really snowboarded at all. I worked 5-6 days a week and I only had 1 hour break. So in the end, it wasn't so much a season for snowboarding. It was more just meeting new people, seeing a beautiful country. And
did you need any kind of visa?
Yeah. So I had to get a working visa. From what I remember, it was the easiest visa I've ever had to get. You could apply online. Less than 24 hours, they already granted me the visa and sent it me back via email. So New Zealand's a pretty good place. I think they really enjoy the tourism. So
I'm from New Zealand. Where was next for Lara?
Yep. So it was just the 1 year in New Zealand and then to Canada. Canada was kind of not really in the plan at the time, but I had the time, so I decided why not. Had a friend who was there as well. Yeah, just got a flight over to Canada, got another van, traveled from Saskatchewan to British Columbia, and ended up finding myself working on Vancouver Island for the summer.
What's Vancouver Island like?
Beautiful. Yeah, I ended up working in the capital of the island, Victoria. So nice. It's exactly what you imagine of Canada. You know, you enter on the boat and you can see the lovely log cabins and they have whale watching tours. Yeah, it's super nice.
In New Zealand, is there much of a sort of social scene? How do you meet people?
Ah, for sure. I think I was super lucky with getting the job that I did because Cadrona really made an effort to make all of the staff kind of come together and have events. And In the end, Wanaka is a super small place. So there's right. only about 4 or 5 bars and clubs or whatever you want to call it that are open. So it's a bit similar to every season, you know, a different place, but everywhere has super positive vibes. Everyone gets together and knows each other after a short amount of time.
Yeah, everyone's got that sort of common interest.
Exactly. Everyone loves the outdoors. So you've always got things to do, people to see.
What's the social scene like in Canada?
It's a bit difficult for me to tell in that way because it's obviously a huge country. I loved the outdoors and kind of doing different activities there, but during the summer, it was more about working and in my free time, just exploring the island a bit. Apart from the van trip going through British Columbia, I spent most of the time kind of saving money and living a more peaceful life.
Where were you working in Canada?
I found a really beautiful little kind of hippie cafe, kind of a walk from where I was living. And so, yeah, I got set up there, found out that making money in Canada, even as a waitress, is incredible because you earn like pretty much over double in tips as you do wage. So you can take home quite a nice package at the end of every shift. So, yeah, that was awesome.
Did you enjoy your experience in Canada?
I did. I loved it. I think it would have been great to have seen more of the winter. Because when I arrived, winter was just ending and I was just there mostly for the summer. When winter started to hit, that was when I ended up going back home. But for what it was, yeah, absolutely beautiful country, super friendly people.
So you did New Zealand, then straight to Canada, then back to the UK for a bit?
Yeah, so after this time, I'd been gone just over 2 years. So it was about time I went home and saw my family and friends. Yeah, somehow ended up in the big smog, somewhere I never thought I would be, but went to London, thought I was going to spend 5 months there and ended up being 3 years. I'm not really a big city person at all. As you know, I prefer kind of smaller places and the outdoors and hikes and sports. It was enjoyable for what it was, but there was something that was kind of making me feel very trapped for a while. Yeah. And I knew I needed to get out. So one day I was doing what I normally do, watching inspirational travel movies and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I found this inspirational true story called The Way, and it was based in Spain on a route called the Camino de Santiago. It's about a 800 kilometer walk starting on the tip between France and Spain. And yeah, it really inspired me. And I thought, what's going to get me inspired again and to leave London and to do the things I enjoy again? So 1 month later, I had a backpack ready to go, and I did the Camino de Santiago and went on a 5.5-6 week walk through the whole northwest coast of Spain.
What was it like?
Incredible. Words can't really sum it up, but yeah, it's exactly what you want it to be. You know, I'm not a religious person. Some people do it for that reason, not me in particular. You can be on your own. It's very easy to meet people. So yeah, it's an adventure. It's a super experience, a nice memory. Beautiful landscape, you know, Spanish people, Spanish culture.
Do you get much time to stop in various places?
Basically, whatever you want to make of it. So, you know, I had a...
There's no like, you have to do it in this amount of time. it's a journey for everyone as individual.
Exactly. It's your walk. It's however much time you want to take. And you also have slightly different pathways each day going to different places. So it's great because you kind of organize your own day. After about a week, you find whatever's comfortable, how much you want to walk in one day without being in too much pain. Because at the end of the day, it's, you know, a marathon, not a sprint. You can figure out what villages you will pass so that you can figure out how much you can do in one day before stopping and sleeping for the night. So they have the albergues, which is like kind of the cheapest hostels. The very cheapest ones are kind of public, normally associated with the local church or community centre. And it's about €4-5 a night, just, you know, 30, 40 bunk beds. You come in, you have your mattress, you sleep for the night, and then you're gone again the next morning.
So do you have any tips to anyone who is thinking about doing that walk?
The great thing about this walk is you don't really have to plan anything. The only thing I'd say is maybe book your very first night when you arrive, just so you know you're going to have a comfortable sleep and can decide the next day what you're going to do. But no, it's very much an independent journey. So for me, it was incredible because it got me back to knowing how to rely on myself and have a good time enjoying things that I want to do. So yeah, I think it's a super opportunity for anyone.
So from there, what happened next?
As you can imagine, being someone that loves different cultures and these types of things, Spain kind of stole my heart after doing this walk, met a lot of locals, and yeah, just fell in love with the culture completely, and also a pretty beautiful language too. So I decided to move to Spain as usual, just, you know, kind of winging it, not really putting too much thought into it. Just thought, I'm looking for something new.
This is it.
So knowing that I had not really one word apart from hola or gracias, I knew that I needed to go there with some kind of backup. So I enrolled in a CELTA qualified English teaching course. It was a 4 or 5 week intensive course. And at the end of it, I was teaching English as a foreign language.
Where did you do that?
So I actually did that in Granada, in the south of Spain. So my idea was, by arriving, and I'd asked many people, they all told me, if you want to start somewhere fresh, Granada's the perfect place because it's 40-minute drive from the mountains, 40-minute drive from the beach, and a great place to really learn the language, immerse in the culture, but you also have that expat community of other people in your situation. So I thought, if I do this course here, then I've got a month to suss the place out. Do I enjoy it? If not, obviously I can move on after the course. But of course, fell in love with the place. So after 1 month, I stayed and then remained there for over 2 years before I came here.
Just going back to the walk again. Do you need much Spanish to do that?
On this particular walk, I wouldn't say that needing the language is so necessary. I mean, it's amazing if you have it, obviously, but you know, you meet people from America, from Europe, from...
So you do kind of have that community there as well, where you do see other people and you're all doing the similar thing.
And... Exactly. Right. And you'll see faces that, you know, you'll see at some point every day for, you know, a week, and then you might not see them again. It just totally depends on different people's rhythms and whether you're staying in the same places or how it goes. But no, generally... Along the walk, I wouldn't say it's touristic, but, you know, the people in the villages, they know the people passing through. So they're quite used to needing a tiny bit of English or, you know, if not, hand signals or, you know, the only thing you're really talking to people about is paying to stay a night or to have a bit of food. So
just learn the basics and you should get by all right.
Exactly.
So when you were living in Spain, was there anything that you had to do, getting residency, visas, things like that?
Spain is you really do need to learn a bit of the language if you want to be there in a longer period. Places like Granada, they still have a lot of old traditions. So as soon as you go places like the foreigner's office or places where you need to get identities, you will not have somebody that speaks any English. So you will need a friend to translate or to, you know, really put yourself in the deep corner and just learn a new language. I spoke absolutely nothing, and after 10 months I was speaking conversational Spanish without even knowing how I had done it, because you are just surrounded by that all the time. So yeah, it's a great way of getting out your comfort zone and feeling pretty proud that you've accomplished these things.
Yeah.
But it's a bit tough in the beginning, for sure. Yeah. Once you land on your feet, like any country, but in a country that doesn't speak as much English, you really do have to work quite hard for it, but it's worth it for sure. If you're surrounded by people from your own country, then, you know, it's going to take a lot longer to practice and, you know, you're not throwing yourself in. Whereas if you don't really have a choice, then it just kind of starts, you know, it starts flowing after a while, and then... Yeah. Things get a lot easier. So it's real tough at first, but then you realize, try your best. And then in the end, you feel better for it. So
you are actually a resident.
Now, yes. I fought my way through the bureaucratic system and I am now a resident of Spain.
Well done. Congratulations.
Yeah, it came at just the right time as well. So
yeah, just before Brexit.
Exactly. So well done. Yeah, something I've been aiming for a while.
How long were you in Spain for?
Even when I was in Spain, I moved around quite a bit. So when I arrived after I did my teaching course, I was in Granada for a few months. And then I also lived in the north of Spain, in Galicia, for a summer. where I worked for a surf camp and met a load of people in the north. That's where I started speaking a lot more Spanish.
What made you decide to go to the north?
I'd never surfed before, and I really wanted, a bit like, you know, doing a winter season, you know that you're going to gain new experiences and the opportunities to learn a new board sport. So I basically applied to all sorts of different surf camps in Portugal and Spain, and this was the one that had the best offer. Yeah, so I went to the beautiful Galicia, or they call it California, because it's like pretty luscious and green.
Wow.
And worked there for a summer. And yeah, after that was in Spain for I think in total I was there about 2 years until after the next summer in Spain. I out of nowhere decided that I'd also always wanted to be a snowboard instructor, even with my very limited experience as a snowboarder.
By this point, how much experience snowboarding had you had?
I'd definitely been on and off snowboarding for a few years. But when we say a few years, it was, you know, a week in France. And by the time you've spent 3 days remembering how to get up on a board, you've got 3 days left and then the holiday is over. So I never really got the chance to progress in any way. And as I told you, New Zealand, I did a lot more work than I did snowboarding. Yeah. So,
and Canada wasn't really the season for it.
No, it was the opposite. Right.
So you decided you want to be a snowboard instructor.
Yeah, I thought, why not? I'll just put this one under my belt as well and grab another qualification of some sort if I can. And so I just decided to go for it.
How did you go about that?
The classic Google search.
Okay. Good start.
Yeah, so Google searched my way into snowboarding courses. Because I was living in Spain, obviously I presumed Andorra was the best option because it's super close. Knowing I didn't really have much experience, I found a company here in Austria and they did 5 weeks training plus covering the costs of the exams and getting a plane to Andorra. So I decided to try something new. I'd never been to Austria. Yeah, so I came here to do basically a 6-week intensive course of training and exams with the hope of becoming a basic snowboard instructor.
And what qualification was it that you achieved?
So this was the CASI. It's the Canadian Association.
Right, so you did the Canadian snowboard instructor training in Austria and in Andorra.
Yeah.
Already been to Canada.
Yeah, as usual, doing everything a little bit backwards, but doing them at some point. The problem in Spain is that the only qualifications you can do only entitles you to be an instructor in Spain. I don't know why, because they have a hell of a lot more sun than they do snow. But the qualification is actually a lot more difficult to obtain in Spain than it is in Canada or the CASI or other qualifications that you can use them around the world. So this was the reason for me going for the CASI. And then when I saw that the closest place I could do this was Austria, I thought, why not?
And you came to Meierhofen.
And I came to Meierhofen, not knowing anything about it.
How much of it were you doing in Andorra?
It was just the exams and I think about a 2-day kind of training course, getting to know the other people you were taking the exams with and your examiner. Mm-hmm. So in total, it was about 5 days.
5 days in Andorra. And how long to do the training here in Meierhofen? Was it in Meierhofen or was it on the Hintertux Glacier, which is at the end of the Zillertal Valley?
Yeah. So because of the time I arrived, it was the end of October. The only option was to go to Hintertux Glacier. Mm-hmm. So we did all of our training there. At the time, hadn't had much snow, so it was pretty icy, pretty strange conditions, but obviously that just made you work a bit harder for it, so not a bad thing. And we did about 5 weeks training before going for the exams.
And how was that experience?
Amazing. At the beginning of that training, realized how terrible I actually was, and at the end of the training, realized how much I had learned. So it was definitely worth coming for.
Excellent, well done. And you achieved it. You've got the CASI now. You're a CASI instructor.
I am indeed.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah.
What an achievement. What was your accommodation situation when you were doing the CASI? Did you have to find that yourself or was that included?
So everything with my course was all included. It was kind of a package deal. So I had the 6 weeks of accommodation, the training, the flights to and back from Andorra, and the ski pass and the exams in Andorra. So it was all an easy way of not really having to, you know, get around it all yourself. It was all kind of ready there for you.
So how did you fund all these different experiences? Is this something you had savings already? I mean, obviously you worked in waitressing, you worked as a barista. Is that how you kind of got to the point where you could afford to go and do these things?
Yeah, I mean, to be totally honest, I've always just kind of winged it from one thing to the other. So I'm definitely not someone that has, you know, saved their whole life and had a very incredible job that pays a lot of money. Yeah. You know, I've kind of moved from one place to the other. But with each job I've had, I have worked it long enough to save the money I've needed towards the next goal that I have. So I very much kind of lived in the moment of earning for a purpose, doing that purpose, and then finding another job for the next purpose.
So you're in Meyerhof and you've done your training, you've achieved your goal, and you stuck around for a bit, is that right?
Yeah, still here. I think that's another blessing of travel, isn't it? You know, you never know where you're going to end up, or you think you're going to stay somewhere for 6 weeks and you end up here for nearly two years. So my plan was actually to do the course 6 weeks and go straight back to Spain. I didn't plan on hanging around, but I hadn't really done much research into this area or this place. I just came here to do what I needed to do. I met a boy, so cliche as it is, that had a part to play. And as part of my course, I also had a season pass for this area.
Right.
So in the end, I thought, well, Spain's not going anywhere, so why don't I just stay for the rest of the season? Mm-hmm. I can enjoy the mounting, use the training I've acquired. And yeah, fell in love and ended up being here for a while.
Excellent. One of your experiences that I wanted to touch on was an unexpected experience that mm-hmm. you had along the way. Do you mind telling us a little bit about that?
No, of course not. So yeah, when we're talking about how long I've been here, after my course, luckily, you know, I got all of that out the way and got my qualifications. So I did what I achieved. In February, I think it was, I found a lump in my breast, and within a couple of weeks, due to an incredible health system here in Austria, I was actually diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer. So yeah, was a pretty crazy time, especially seeing as I had kind of uprooted from a place I had just found my foundations in Spain, come here for a short period, didn't, you know, really know anyone or the way of life. And suddenly, yeah, all this kind of was thrown on me.
How did you feel at that point? I bet it was pretty terrifying.
Yeah, definitely terrifying to say the least. Of course, you know, I have no family here. The friends I had made were very new friends. My relationship was also very fresh. So it was very difficult to know what was the best thing to do. Luckily for me, that choice was made up for me when I was diagnosed with this disease. And within 20 minutes, I was given a very well-known specialist who told me point blank that basically if I went home in the next few weeks, I probably would not make it in time to be saved. And so Austria decided to take me under their wing and save my life, basically. Wow. So I have a hell of a lot to be thankful for in this country.
Yeah.
Went through the works, had chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and a double mastectomy. So not a disadvantage, but, you know, new boobs and everything.
Excellent. Must have been a really scary time for you to be away from your family and friends back home. Luckily, you had met John and he was a massive support for you. And obviously, like we said, the Austrian medical service did take you under their wing and did a really fantastic job and got you back to health. So
they did. I've got a lot to be thankful for here, and I have to say as well, you know, the seasonaire life, you know, winter summer seasons, when it's very hectic, you know, you're mm-hmm. meeting a lot of people, everyone likes to have fun, but in the end this actually helped me a lot because everyone else is going about their time just enjoying every minute, and this really reminded me during this time that I kind of really had to do the same no matter what was going on. So it really kind of gave me a positive attitude to just push through it.
Good.
Yeah, came out the other side, still here.
Well done, mate, well done. How are you feeling now?
Amazing. Yeah, better than I have in years, actually. I think doubled up with, you know, everything going on with Corona, and we have quite strict lockdowns here. It's making for a very healthy life, you know, mountain every day.
How was your COVID experience? Tell us about that.
You know, after the whole kind of cancer thing, I thought that was the end. But no, I actually got diagnosed with Corona as well about 2 months after it had all kicked off. We were very lucky. Our bosses who have the staff accommodation for us here and John's work were very kind to us. They let us stay here. while we kind of quarantined and were looked after again by the Austrian health system. And yeah, everything wasn't too bad, to be honest. Just, you know, a bit of a bad flu, getting through it. And came out the other side again. And we stayed until COVID allowed us to get back into Spain, because John obviously isn't a resident like I am. So it was a bit hit and miss when people are allowed in and out of different countries at the moment.
Been that, like, the whole year has just been
the same everywhere.
No one really knows. You've got to wait for the right times and got to abide by the rules. So you were there for a couple of months?
No, so we timed it perfectly. We arrived 2 months later than we expected. We stayed for basically the summer for about 5 months. Get John a bit adjusted to, you know, the Spanish way of life and the language. Yeah. And then we arrived back here the beginning of December, you know, to attempt to have another slightly normal season with everything going on.
Things have been a bit different here this year.
Very.
But you've been teaching?
Yes. So the other thing I mainly do now is teach English. Normally in Spain, I work for academies or private classes, but now I am based solely online, teaching people from all over the world to progress in the English language.
Amazing. So you've also got your own website, laraparsonsproject.com.
I do indeed, yeah.
You've got a lot of information on there about your cancer story and some of your photography. Have you got links to Etsy as well?
Yep, so there's that's, I guess, kind of my hub for everything. So my website has a few travel stories, my experience on the Camino de Santiago, other Spanish stories, other areas of travel, my stories during breast cancer, you know, offering support and kind of different bits of information about it, and links to my other things, so my photography portfolio. And yeah, my little Etsy shop, have a few prints for sale. So
what's next then, Lara? What's next for you?
Oof, who knows? I mean, at the moment, just enjoying every day. I mean, it's a blessing here that, you know, we have the mountain open to go riding and get some exercise. So we're very lucky. Still teaching, you know, really kind of pushing that forwards, building clients every day, which is incredible during this time.
Is there anything you can advise people who might want to get into the teaching? How would people go about that?
Yeah, it depends what you would like to do, to be honest. I mean, you have the general TEFL qualification, which you can do. I think you can even do this online. You have to dedicate about 120 hours to practicing and learning the different techniques.
Right.
And you can generally use this all over the world and online. The particular one that I did is a slightly higher qualification, right, not by much money at all, but this gives you the freedom to work in any country. It's a, as I said, a slightly higher qualification, so CV wise they're going to look at this more so than a TEFL.
Yeah.
And with a TEFL, you, from what I hear, you have to build on it every year. You have to do another practice test that costs a couple of hundred euros.
Oh, right.
Whereas the one that I did is a lifelong qualification. So it's called the CELTA. It's a Cambridge English qualification. So yeah, for a little bit more hard work and time,
you might just stand out on your CV.
Yeah, perfect. I would go for that one.
So where is it that you call home at this point in time? Where's home to you?
For me, it has to be Spain.
Yeah.
I think, you know, England, I haven't properly lived in for about 10 years. Great place, but terrible weather. And, you know, with the situation going on right now, it's doesn't feel like a very happy place, to be honest.
No.
Austria, you know, beautiful, absolutely great for winters. But Spain, it really did steal my heart. You've got the dancing, you've got the positive energy, open-minded, friendly people, amazing food, and, you know, a new language that is really great to learn.
Yeah.
You've got the great sun as well, and you can travel around. Yeah, for me, you've got it all.
If you had to pick one place for people to go and visit, if someone said, I can only go to one place, where shall I go? What would you say?
Well, it's going to sound real boring, but it's going to have to be Spain again.
Yeah?
Yeah, it really is. There's something about the place and the culture, you know. As I said, down in Granada, you've got the heat. You're within the beach and the mountains on opposite sides by 40 minutes driving. And then everywhere you go, you have a totally different neck of the woods. The north as well, you've got the surf, you've got the north is a bit like England, but with good weather, the luscious green landscapes, but with sun.
Ah, good.
So, you know, and the food, it's an awesome place to start adventuring for sure.
Yeah. Are there any opportunities that stand out for you that you've had solely from working abroad that you wouldn't have had working at home in the UK? Is there anything that you can say, I definitely wouldn't have done this or I definitely wouldn't have done that if I hadn't have gone in the first place?
Well, that's a tough question. A good question, but a tough one. I think so many opportunities and so many things that I've done. I mean, England is great, but it's, you know, it's a very small place. It's closed off. You don't really know what's out there. So to be honest, there's many, many things that I've done just by seeing what happens from one day to the next, or meeting people is another huge thing, because when you go to a different place and see new people, new cultures, new languages, you learn things about the place and the people that you would have had no idea being at home.
Yeah.
And this can open even jobs and, you know, different types of opportunities. So
yeah,
I would advise just go for it and have as many experiences as possible.
Is there one thing you always have to pack in your suitcase?
Yeah, it's going to make me sound a bit like a huntsman, but it would be my Leatherman knife.
I mean, it's handy.
it's so like handy. It's the best tool in the world. It's basically a Swiss Army knife, but a million times better.
Perhaps so, you know, not in hand luggage.
Maybe not in hand luggage, but then again, I drive everywhere with the van, so
exactly, yeah.
Planes have not really been something that I've been on for quite a while now. Yeah, always useful to have a handy tool, you know, need to take apart from some shelves or build something.
You've done your fair share of van lifing, actually, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
How's that been?
Best thing in the world.
Really?
Yeah, I'd have to say even better than Spain, if I could say it.
Yeah?
It's for me, it's pure freedom. You know, there's traveling the world, there's backpacking, there's traveling by plane, but having a van somewhere that you can drive where you want within reason, stay where you want, wake up in the most beautiful places and be able to enjoy the journey as well is for me the number one thing. I absolutely love driving, so for me it's never really an A to B situation. It's sometimes I enjoy the process of getting somewhere before I actually arrive, and you know, it's pretty cheap apart from paying insurance every year. You know, you don't have to pay for anywhere to stay, you don't have to make huge plans finding hostels or anything. You just go and see where the wind takes you.
What's the longest period of time you've done the van life thing in one go?
It's always been quite on and off, so in one go I don't think it's been a huge amount of time, probably about 8 months. So I've never done one full year as yet.
Right, okay.
But
8 months is still a
long
stint,
point
though.
That probably will change. Yeah. I move around too much sometimes that, you know, I change vans as well, so it just depends what's going on.
Throughout all your travels, are there, and I mean, you've got quite a lot of stories and you've had quite a journey, ups and downs along the way.
Definitely.
Yeah. But are there any stories that stand out to you overall that you definitely wouldn't have had unless you had embarked on your journey?
Yeah, I can definitely think of one for sure. So when I arrived to Canada, my visa came in a couple of months late. I was staying in a friend's basement while I was waiting for this to arrive so that I could travel. And lucky for me, I had a friend that had a very beat up old van. And he said, you know what, I never use it, so pay for the insurance, pay to get it sorted, and you can just take it, bring it back to me when you're done. So, you know, got everything ready, sorted out the van, thought I'd fix it up perfectly, left where I was, and just literally entered the border of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I'd been driving for about 6 hours and the van totally broke down.
No.
Talk about being in the right place in the right time again. I ended up in a really beautiful national water park called Waterton. And because I didn't have much money at the time, I found myself working at the local golf course of this national park to save enough money to fix up the van. And yeah, somehow from this experience, I fell in love with golf.
Right.
After 3 months, I was working in the restaurant at the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished work, I was playing 36 to 48 holes a day.
Wow.
Alone or with other friends. I had my own cart because I enjoyed it that much. And yeah, after 3 months of living there, I entered the Women's Open and I came second.
What? You entered the Open and you came second.
Yeah, so you can imagine the amount of stares I was getting from the little old ladies that have lived, breathed and played golf for their whole life in this in this little national park. But yeah, did a lot better than I was expecting.
Well done.
Yeah, there's something to say for, you know, practice makes perfect. Yeah.
Oh, cool story.
So I guess it will have to be that one.
So we've covered quite a lot today already. You said earlier on that you'd watched The Way, mm-hmm. the movie, and that had been an inspiration to you. Are there any books that you would recommend, or any inspirational quotes you live by, or any advice you would give just to finish off the interview today?
Well, my favourite quote might be a little bit cliche, but is enjoy the little things. Tend to use this a lot. Even have a little necklace by The Make, enjoy the little things. But yeah, I think it's very true, you know. Yeah. Just live each day. You never know what's going to happen. I think the last couple of years, with especially our situation, Brexit, Corona, you know, all this stuff going on, you can plan as much as you like, but things can always change. So mm-hmm. I would just be open-minded and see that there's many opportunities without having to plan too far in advance. Yeah. Planning is great, but sometimes things can be around the corner that you're not expecting, and they can also be amazing. So
exactly, leave a bit of wiggle room. Yeah, in your plans.
The typical thing on Google Images, but they're true.
Yeah, exactly. I think that about wraps it up for us today, Lara. Okay. Unless there's anything else you want to... Oh, there is one thing I've got to ask you.
Go
actually
for it. Tell me,
do you have anyone that you can call out to come on the show and have a chat with me?
I do, indeed. I've got two people that I'm thinking of. Number one, don't think I'm being biased, but is actually my boyfriend, John.
John.
Who you know very well. I guess one of the reasons we click so well is because he has lived a very similar, if not crazier, life to me in terms of moving around, experiencing mm-hmm. different cultures. So he would be a great one for you to talk to. And the other person would be my best pal, who is English originally, but we actually met doing our English teaching course in Spain.
Oh, okay.
She has a lot of history, grown up in France for a while and now has lived in Spain for quite a while, but she's a bit of a jack of all trades as well, so she'd offer some insights into the expat life for sure.
And what's her name?
So her name is Jane.
Awesome.
Jane and John.
Jane and John, it's happening. You have been called. So thanks again, Lara. We covered so much today on the show and you've really given great insight into all the different places you've been and how to go about doing different things. So thank you very much for that. Just before you go, let us know where we can find your blog and your Etsy shop with all your photography. And of course, if people want to get in contact with you for any English lessons, where can they find you?
So you can go directly through my website, laraparsonsproject.com, or for my teaching, I work through a platform called Verbling. So you can find me at verbling.com, teachers, Lara Parsons. But the easiest option, go to my website and you can find everything you need through that. So
thank you so much, Lara.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Take care. Wow, what a journey. Such an amazing chat with a beautifully positive Lara Parsons there. Thanks again so much for coming on the show, Lara. As always, in the show notes, you can find a link to Lara's website, as well as any other links relating to today's show. You can now click to subscribe on any podcast platform to get new releases of this show as they come out, so please click and subscribe. A massive thank you to our sponsors, Mike's Sports Bar in Meyerhofen, Wandering Woods Coffee in the UK, and of course, thank you to Mondo Wave for the music. Thanks for tuning in, guys, and I look forward to seeing you all again next time.